We will call the meeting of Climate and Energy to order. Welcome, everybody. Let's see, first on the agenda, we have the minutes from February 8th. Representative Kraft, have you had a chance to look at the meeting minutes from February 8th?
I have. I move their approval, Madam Chair.
Great. Any discussion on the meeting minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion carries and the minutes are adopted. Let's see, we have a couple of bills on the agenda today, and so we're going to start with House File 1262 with Representative Hemmingson Yeager. You can go ahead and run up to the table. And welcome to committee. You can go ahead and move your bill, Representative.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Amanda Hemmingson Yeager, and I'm here to present on House File 1262 and motion that it be referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law.
Great. Well, welcome. And with that, why don't you go ahead and tell us about your bill?
Great. So good afternoon, and thanks again. I just kind of want to state that this is a bill that has been in the works for about 3 years now, so I'm glad that I get to take part in its progress. The long and short of it is that this bill allows homeowners to put solar on their roofs with reasonable expectations from HOA. So, some background information for you. About 1 in 4 Minnesotans live in one of the state's more than 7,700 homeowners associations. I also live in an HOA in Woodbury. Many of these Minnesotans want the opportunity to invest in their homes and lower their energy bills. There are actually 27 other states, including Iowa and Wisconsin, that have laws that limit HOA restrictions on residential solar installations. And most recently in 2022, Indiana and Ohio passed some similar laws. Under current Minnesota state law, however, HOAs can ban rooftops solar installation without any reason. This has become a concern and a frustration for many people in my own district, and as I learned more, it's widely felt across many different districts. So this bill balances HOA homeowners' rights with HOA association duties so that HOAs do still have input in kind of facilitating this to happen. So if I may, I'd just like to kind of give a brief overview of the bill for your reference. Section 1 basically requires that utilities provide customers with their data, including their monthly usage, their usage by time of day, if that's relevant, and if the usage is used to calculate the customer's demand charge. Section 2 adds some definitions and states that an HOA cannot refuse to permit the installation of solar panels, but it does say that they can establish certain requirements, for example, that the installation is done by a licensed contractor. That the panels do not exceed beyond the peak of the roof or beyond the edge of the roof, that the installer indemnifies or reimburses for damages, that the homeowner lists the energy system on their insurance, and that the homeowner is responsible for the solar panels maintenance and removal. So one of the goals of HOAs is to preserve home values, and it's been found that solar panels actually increase the values of homes, sometimes up to 4%. So besides the savings and benefits to homeowners, investments into solar on homes also strengthen our grid, makes it more efficient by lowering the distribution needs and reducing transmission loss, makes us more resilient to extreme weather events, more secure, and helps us meet our clean energy goals. So with that, I would like to invite our testifiers up to expand further.
Great. And let's see. First, we have Logan O'Grady. Did you... What? There were a couple of questions. Do you want to, can we do a testimony first? Okay, perfect, great. Welcome to committee, Mr. O'Grady. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Logan O'Grady. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association. I know I've been here before, but MNSEA is a 501c6 trade organization. We represent over 140 companies throughout Minnesota working in solar and energy storage. Altogether, our 140 companies employ over 5,000 Minnesotans in this industry. I want to thank Representative Hemmingson Yeager for taking this bill over. It has been around for a few years now, and it really has been a bipartisan bill in both bodies, because I think just generally Minnesotans agree that we should allow homeowners to do whatever they want with their properties, within reason, of course. And I think that that's even more true when those investments that they choose to make can save them money through their utility costs. From an industry perspective, which is obviously what I bring, we always are looking for ways to cut red tape and cut barriers to doing business in Minnesota. Obviously, if you're completely prohibited from doing businesses in certain communities, that is a barrier that we've been trying to overcome. So this is a great bill that still allows for restrictions on solar, but doesn't completely prohibit it in certain communities. And we just ask the committee to support it. I'm happy to stick around for questions.
Next, we have Bobby King from Solar United Neighbors. Welcome to committee, Mr. King. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bobby King. I'm the Minnesota State Director for Solar United Neighbors. We're a national nonprofit that works to help people go solar. And we do this through coordinating buying groups. We have currently ones going on in the Twin Cities area now, Duluth and Arrowhead, working on one in Brainerd shortly. And as a part of these buying groups, we find ways for low-income homeowners to go solar too. It's an interest of ours to make sure solar is accessible to all Minnesotans. And then, of course, we like to promote policy that makes more solar possible in Minnesota. And we're interested in making sure Minnesotans that want to can take advantage of the economic benefits of going solar. It allows you not only to lower your cost of energy, but it also allows you to stabilize it. Once you pay for the solar, you know what your energy costs are going to be. And for HOA homeowners, a lot of these houses are, they're large, they have great roofs for solar, the energy burdens are high for some of them. I was working with one HOA homeowner whose estimated savings over 25 years was $50,000, but was blocked from going solar by his HOA. And the other aspect of this for us is that our state has now ambitious renewable energy goals, which are fantastic, and sometimes I think we forget that distributed rooftop solar can be a significant part of that energy if we create the policies and incentives to make it happen. So the National Renewable Energy Lab estimates 23% of Minnesota's power can come from rooftop solar. The Inflation Reduction Act now has increased the tax credit, investment tax credit. You can get to 30%, so there's homeowners now anxious to move on solar and take advantage of that. So, and our take on this is that HOA still maintain some control. They can have control over some aesthetics, who is allowed to install, but they can't just say no. And I know that, in fact, I just got an email from someone as I left the office to drive up here that I'm in an HOA. What do I do about my solar? I'm going to approach my board, and I'm worried about getting told no. But if this were to pass this year, for sure next year there will be many HOA homeowners solar, more renewable energy on our grid, more solar jobs in our state, and more security around energy costs for those homeowners. So thank you. Thanks for carrying the bill.
Thank you, Mr. King. Next up, we have Carl Severson, HOA owner from Chaska. Welcome to committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I did take the liberty of printing out copies of the testimony I'm going to be giving. So if you would allow, if I could pass these along.
Sure, the page can grab them and she can distribute them for you. Thank you, Mr. Severson. As you get seated, oops, something maybe just fell. Your phone, I think, behind you. Your phone, I think, fell.
Oops,
it's on the side.
Don't want to lose that.
No.
Welcome to committee. When you get yourself seated, you can state your name for the record and please proceed with your testimony.
Okay. My name is Carl Severson. I'm a resident of Chaska, Minnesota. Chairman Akin, thank you for the opportunity to come before the committee to provide testimony in support of House Files 1262. My name is Carl Severson, a resident of Chaska, Minnesota, and the Hidden Creek Homeowners Association, HCHA. I'm a retired commander, Civil Engineer Corps, United States Navy, and a retired professional engineer in the states of California and Iowa. Over my 53-year career, I've held positions as operating engineer, naval officer, state and federal civilian employee, energy manager slash consultant, and consulting engineer. I've held certifications as a certified energy manager, certified plant engineer, as well as other energy-related certifications. I've performed or reviewed hundreds of energy efficiency analyses using simple payback and life cycle cost analysis methodologies. My wife and I purchased our townhome in HCHA in 2018. Over the last 4 years, I've analyzed and invested several energy efficiency improvement projects for our home, including 7 photovoltaic nightlight skylights, a high-efficiency HVAC system, numerous LED interior lighting fixtures and lamps, 7 motion-detecting perimeter LED lighting systems, 2 smart thermostats, additional wall and ceiling insulation, and 2 photovoltaic attic exhaust fans. For each of these improvement projects, I performed an engineering economic analysis to determine the value of those projects. The HCHA has had no objection to those home improvements, some of which involve penetration of the or attachment to the building exterior surfaces. Having past familiarity with the solar photovoltaic system's efficiency, reliability, and aesthetics, I researched the current technology for these features. I determined that I could replace 98% of my annual electric consumption provided by the city of Chaska with a solar array mounted to my roof. Today's systems are sold and installed with a 25-year warranty on parts and labor. The current useful life of today's solar panels is estimated to be 50 years. The engineering economic analysis used the 25-year warranty period and a life cycle cost analysis. That analysis resulted in an annual return of investment of 8% for the project. Federal tax credits and city energy rebates were available for the project. The estimated annual reduction of conventionally produced electricity was over 12,000 kilowatt hours. The roof is owned and maintained by the HCHA. I submitted a required package to the HCA board for review. At that time, I was told, I held the position of director at large on the board for HCHA. The board president solicited comments from all association homeowners. I was advised that the matter would be discussed once all board members were back on site. I received a notification from the board president that the project was unanimously disapproved. I was denied an opportunity to address issues presented to the board by association homeowners or answer questions that the board members might have. I was told by the board president that I was excluded from the board discussions due to a conflict of interest. I was denied the opportunity to defend the project. Many of the concerns brought up to the HCHA were due to misconceptions about how modern solar panels work. These include roof maintenance. As a system owner, I would pay for the removal and reinstallation of solar panels in the event of a repair replacement of the roofing system. All potential installers provide a 5-year no-leak guarantee for panel installation sites. The 2 top-tier potential installers have been in business for 11 and 4 years, respectively, with no claims on installation roof leak issues. Aesthetic appearance. The solar panels will be solid black, providing a more pleasing aesthetic appearance and match the existing roof shingles. A reflection of the solar panel sunlight on homeowner windows. In order to experience ground level reflections, the sun elevation needs to exceed more than 90 degrees of the plane of the roof. This is not possible for the construction features of the roof and the sun's maximum daily elevations throughout the year. Direction of solar panel issues, the comment of placing the panels on the north face of the roof had no merit. Solar panel warranty period and useful life. The solar panels and their associated microinverters have a 25-year warranty on parts and labor with the estimated useful life of 50 to 60 years. Economic considerations. The engineering economic analysis showed that the system will have an annual return of investment of 8% with the total cost savings of over $30,000 for the 25-year analysis period. Some recommendations that I had for the current bill is to clarify that multi-single-family dwellings within a building be included, and also that they clarify the payer of a second proposal if requested by the HOA. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on this important legislation. I hope to see this passed this year and have a solar array in my home in the near future. So I'd welcome an opportunity to answer any questions and that may be based on this testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Severson. I appreciate that. And we have one other person that signed up to testify, Kayla Christensen, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Conservative Energy Forum. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, my name is Kayla Christensen, Executive Director of the Minnesota Conservative Energy Forum. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Kayla Christensen and I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Conservative Energy Forum. We are a nonprofit education and advocacy organization that promotes an all of the above approach to energy. I am here to testify in support of House File 1262. At MNCEF, we believe competitive, market-driven solutions by removing regulatory barriers are the key to long-term, affordable, and stable energy grid. And Minnesotans agree. In our 2022 Minnesota statewide clean energy poll, 71% of voters stated they prefer competitive approaches over mandates or taxes when it comes to increasing clean energy. And 80% of voters said it is important to stop local barriers like HOAs from putting unreasonable restrictions on installing rooftop solar. We believe landowners and homeowners should be able to decide what to do with their land and homes, and this bill gives them the freedom to do so. Removing this barrier will benefit not only individual homeowners installing these systems, but the broader energy grid as well, getting more renewable energy online. Homeowners can reduce their energy bills and even allow excess power generated from the solar systems back to the grid. While utility scale renewable energy is important, individuals will also need to be a part of the solution. And this bill gets us closer to that goal without mandates. As advancements in technology continue to improve existing energy sources and create new ones, market demand for clean energy will only continue to increase. It will be crucial that we also reduce barriers to getting these sources online in the future. I urge you to support this legislation and thank you for the opportunity to weigh in.
Thank you for your testimony. Before we move on, is there anyone else that wanted to testify on the bill? Doesn't look like it, so maybe we will turn to members' questions. Did you have anything to say, Representative?
No. Got my notebook ready.
A couple people on the list. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just this could be a question. You know, it's how will this affect if you? I don't live in an HOA. I really don't know the answer to this question. How would this affect if you signed a contract that you would agree to the HOA's rules? So you essentially a legal binding contract. How does this, if this law was to pass, how would that integrate with those legally binding contracts that you signed as a homeowner within an HOA that you would abide by the rules of the HOA?
Sure.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Sorry. Thank you. Thank you, Representative. That's a good question. So from my understanding, a lot of the bylaws don't really include solar in their language. I am hoping to move this to judiciary next where we can dig into that question more. If I may refer to one of the testifiers that they have a more succinct answer. Maybe not.
I'm not seeing anybody raise their hand that do. So I think that there... The question Representative Swazinski is asking is, if I'm understanding it correctly, is if an existing contract would be indicated by anything. And Representative or Mr. Eloff, do you have a question? Or you were pointing that direction. I'm trying to do a little body language here.
Madam Chair, Representative Swedzinski is asking a very good question because it is a contract that has been signed by the homeowners and on behalf of the association that governs what happens there. The federal constitution and the state constitution prohibits impairment of contracts. But there are exceptions. Thankfully, one of my colleague at House Research, who deals with housing issues, wrote a publication a couple of years ago that speaks to them, and I'd like to share that with you because I think it's important. The courts have developed, I guess, what lawyers would call a three-pronged test to determine if an impairment of contract rights is sufficiently required by the public interest that's served by doing so. And if legislation survives scrutiny of each of those tests, it's found to be constitutional. And the three tests are this. One, is the impairment substantial? And that is probably going to be seen in the eyes of the beholder, I imagine. But there are provisions in the bill that limit, the representative indicated, the size and placement of the solar panels. The second prong of the test is, if the impairment is substantial, has the state demonstrated a significant and legitimate public purpose behind the legislation? Although it's not specifically stated here, I think it's clear that the goals of increasing solar by means of passing this bill would speak to the state's goals of reducing greenhouse gases, more renewable energy, et cetera, et cetera. And the third prong of the test is, if there's a significant and legitimate public purpose, does it match up with, is the adjustment of the rights and responsibilities of both contracting parties based on reasonable conditions, and are they appropriate to the public purpose so as to justify the adoption of the law? And that's another question that I think people could differ on. But those are the three questions that are looked at to determine if a bill that would impair contracts is or is not constitutional.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good job, Mr. Eloff. You know, it'd be my guess that, you know, from the foundation, when I hear of people that live in HOAs, aesthetics is the primary, you know, driver of a lot of those, which would probably fall under the third of those three-pronged approaches that would potentially put this into some sort of a legal peril within an HOA or the constitutionality of the process that we're going through here today. You know, it's, you know, at the end of the day, you know these places are chosen by people to live in or not an HOA. You know, whether it's the plowing over of local elected boards in our co-ops or the plowing over of HOA boards, whether they're democratically elected. I don't even know how these folks are. Is this elected? Are they appointed? I don't know. But they're elected. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, there are current processes that HOA owners can go through their own systems. You know, we have examples here. Mr. Severson, it looks like he was potentially denied his request to put this forward. You know, I think that's, you know, we need to really think about those things because, you know, regardless, you know, folks bought into this HOA as a decision, and they bought into this decision knowing that there are certain rules and regulations going to be applied, and there are current opportunities for them to change them. And we should tread awfully careful that, you know, if this legislature continues to make a habit of plowing over locally elected officials, whether it's a township board, whether it's a directing board over a co-op, whether it's an HOA board, I mean, habits that are repeated become habitual, and it appears that potentially has the direction that this legislature is choosing to go in, and to the utmost degree. You know, this seems, I think your heart's probably in the right place, but it, you know, this is not just someone's home that they own all by themselves without any extra governance. This is, they have rules. If they have it,
you know, we should respect those things to certain extents. You know, if someone opened a strip club in an HOA, you know, the legislature probably wouldn't be carrying a bill to do that. But because this happens to have favor within some, appears bipartisan on both sides of the aisle in the Senate, at least, that, you know, it's going to move forward. But, you know, it is what it is, I guess.
So. Representative Henningsen, you here? Do you have a response at all?
Yes, thank you.
That was probably the best example. But.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. I was kind of taking notes as you were speaking. When my husband and I were purchasing and looking to purchase our first house, we knew we wanted to live in Woodbury. Great schools, great parks and trails. It's a great community. You would be hard-pressed to find a neighborhood that isn't in an HOA in Woodbury. So to limit that market choice was kind of frustrating. We were very insistent with our realtor that we wanted to see the bylaws because we knew that we may want to do solar, we may want to look at heat pumps, we may want to put a swing set in our backyard because we were looking at having kids. And so it was very difficult for our realtor to even get the bylaws of the HOA prior to us purchasing the home. And as I've talked to more people and they've shared their stories with me, the elections processes vary by homeowner association. The bylaws vary in differing accessibility. So it's just been really difficult for some of these constituents and some of these people to work with their HOAs to get solar on their roof. I am happy that we are collaborating with the Association of Homeowners Associations, and that's kind of why we have this language here that they can't prohibit it just outright, but we do have mechanisms in here so that the homeowners associations are also covered and that they have their input as well. So that helps answer about living in an HOA.
Any follow-up, Representative Swazinski? Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question to the author. When we heard this bill, I don't know if it was last year or year before, it's under applicability. It was single family detached dwellings whose owner is the sole owner of the entire building in which the dwelling is located and who is solely responsible for the maintenance, repair, replacement, and insurance of the entire building. This year we have in line 2.9. Single-family dwellings where the dwelling owner owns or has the right to exclusive use of the roof. So my question in all that, would this apply to a building that may have six units in it that they're all adjoined, or does it have to be a single dwelling that, in this case, the gentleman from Chaska owns the entire roof system?
Representative Hemmingson.
Thank you. My understanding is that, yes, it's a single-family home or a dwelling, and the owner must have rights to that roof. So whether that's detached or whether that's part of a bigger roof, I guess it doesn't really explicitly state in the language. Maybe House Legal can correct me.
It looks like Mr. O'Grady has some
I can help if it's helpful. Madam Chair, Representative, we've been working with the HOAs over the last few years. We thought we had the language in there as it was before I was piecing together some emails, and it wasn't. One outstanding issue that we've been trying to solve is if there is an owner of a multi-unit, like townhouse or row house or whatever it is, that rents out other units and they want to put solar on that roof, we're trying to figure out how to allow for that without prohibiting that just because it's a multi-unit dwelling. So we were trying to get around it by saying they must have complete control and ownership over it to do it. We're still working on that language with the HOAs, and I think Representative Hemmingsen-Yeager for a possible amendment in judiciary on that issue.
Madam Chair. So, as somebody who works on roofs, sadly quite too many of them last year, it was a good thing actually. But when it comes to HOAs, many of those HOAs, they take responsibility for the entire roof system. I have worked on houses like it was a side-by-side where the one side owner replaced the roof but the other one did not. And they literally adjoin in the middle. And when you leave old and put new, you end up with a leak. And I understand that Mr. Syverson said that he would absorb the cost of removing and replacing should there be like another hail event, because they would have to remove all that to replace all the underlayment and shingles. But there's also, then you get into another question, is can the existing structure support the additional dead load? And then would, and you're talking about a system that is all very much tied together, and typically depending on the age of your unit, when you get up in the attic system, there's fire break at every common wall. And so you would have to actually penetrate that and replace it. This is a much bigger thing, and I, quite frankly, HOA is going to drive me nuts too. I mean, and there's other ones in Delaware stuff that I have actually fought with these people, because there is some of it. And what Representative Swedinsky was saying is when you have this contract and you talk about the, you know, is it overextending one part or the other? But if, say there's 100 homes in that HOA and 80 of them don't like looking at solar, which I know sounds petty, but for 20 to be happy, 80 are going to be mad. And I actually did live in an HOA once. I'm glad I don't anymore, because there are some little things in there. But maybe one thing you should have in here is that upon potentially looking at a property in an HOA, they must have those bylaws available for that potential buyer. Mine was a brand new development, so it was accessible at the time. But when you take into account how these are built and how these are structured, and the fact that most of them have the liability of the roof, and I'm still actually trying to get a clear answer of like insurance cost of trying to get all that off or on under an insurance claim. So just something to consider. I just my two cents. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, did you have any comments?
Yeah, Representative Beckland, thank you very much. That's kind of some similar questions going through my head. Do you want to work together on making bylaws available? Cool.
There we go. I see it.
Thank you.
That's great. Next on the list, we have Representative Altendorf.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. I guess I'm going to echo some of the same things that have been said here, but I think sometimes when we look down the road, you know, again, there might be some unintended consequences. Just a couple of numbers or facts. The average person is moving every 7 years. And so in something like an HOA, we are a collective ownership. We all know this, right? And so, again, I have a real concern on any buildings or properties where there is a shared wall of a unit. And again, it's not that we're against solar, it's the mandate. I had one of your testimonials, they were saying we're moving ahead with solar without having any mandates. And actually, no, that's not true, because putting this into law would require or mandate homeowners associations to adopt this or to allow it. So that's not really true to say that we're skirting around that there's not a mandate on this. So my concern is, there are other processes to take this to the Homeowners Association, and it feels like we're kind of doing a top-down approach instead of doing the correct approach. Because my husband and I own some rental properties, I know the problems with if you put solar on one roof and perhaps the life expectancy of the roof is at 10 years, 20 years, that could cause a problem, an unforeseen problem down the road with replacing the whole roof. So I really, really am very leery of getting into a situation where, again, this is a mandate requiring skirting past the Homeowners Association rules and regulations and kind of forcing our beliefs on someone else. So if they wanted to do it, I would suggest going through the process. But thank you.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative, for those concerns. Again, this is really where I'm grateful to be collaborating with the homeowners associations to make sure that, you know, we're considering all downstream impacts of this language. Again, the bill basically just says that we are allowing our homeowners to take part in this market by reducing the barrier of the homeowners associations outright prohibiting solar installation for whatever reason or for no reason. The bill does describe kind of an application process. So there is a process in place for people to submit an application with specs and with requirements that an HOA would need to make a determination. So we continue that conversation with the homeowners associations.
And I will just maybe also say that in my experience putting panels on our roof, we put on new shingles first, and I don't think we would have gone through that expense had it not been for new shingles. And so if we had a 20-year-old roof, we probably wouldn't have gone through the expense recognizing that a roof would need to be changed. But Representative Susan Skitt, is this on this?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, and to that question, you know, I think that's where, you know, if the HOA is the actual owner and responsible for the roofing, you know, how do those two things jive up, right? For, I mean, timing. Let's say your shingles right now are currently at 15 years. You have 5 years relatively life left on that shingle set, but you want to put up an asset on that roof that's going to last for 20. Right. Who's responsible for not, I mean, it only says in the bill that, well, this guy said, well, I'll pay for the removal of the and the put up. You know, is that, how does that process actually work within the HOA, saying, well, 20 years are up, your neighbor's shingles are going to have to get replaced. You have 5 years left of this, so do they have to sue them? Can they ask them? Do they have to come to the legislature and ask permission? Does the HOA just get to say, hey, we voted, we're going to do it, take it down? Because you're like, well, I just put those up 5 years ago. Like, how does that work? Since the legislature is getting involved.
I think Mr. Eloff wants to come in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the question Representative Swedzinski is asking is answered in the bill on lines 226 to 228, which says that the owner and each successive owner of a solar energy system is be responsible for removing the system if reasonably necessary to repair, perform maintenance, or replace common elements or limited common elements, so that the owner of the system and the successive owner
has to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Ewell. Let's see. Next on the list, we have Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. I was looking at this and wondering if this analysis could help. It seems like we should distinguish between common interest communities, and there's some terms of art here in the language that have single-family dwellings within a community versus a single-family dwelling that's in a shared unit, like an apartment. Right? So think of an apartment versus a single-family home. So it seems like it's fairly easy to work with it if it's a single-family home setting versus a multi-family home setting. So that may help. And it doesn't seem like to be a problem. Some of these concerns that you have within a single family home setting as opposed to the common interest or setting. Well, maybe we can work with some of that language to further clarify it and distinguish it to help address some of your concerns.
Not really hearing a question there. Thank you for those comments. Representative Hollins, I think, is our last question before we move on.
Thank you, Chair Akam, and thank you, Representative Hummingson-Yeager. I think I was mostly going to refer to that Section 5 about the allowable conditions, that it would be required to remove them, and I think that's an important aspect of it. As a person who has lived in a dwelling that is controlled by an HOA, but since you know, our amazing researcher already pointed it out, I guess I don't need to. The one thing I'll say is I was raised by libertarian hippies, and I hate HOAs, like, with a passion.
I think we can all agree.
So I really support this. I really support this legislation. I believe that there is nothing more sacred than a person's home and what they want to do with that home. And we might not say that they own it outright in the same way that you own a single family home, but when you spend your hard-earned money to live in that place and to have control over your space that is your home, I think you should get to do with it what you want to do with it, as long as it's not harming anybody else. So thank you for bringing this forward. I really appreciate it.
Right, we've got Representative
Go ahead.
Did you want to mention
just to that quickly?
That's what I was about to say.
Go ahead.
Well, we're all getting wrapped around the axle on the same thing, it looks like. So I just wanted to
I mean, maybe it's just a point of clarification for that line 226. If an HOA doesn't put that ruling in effect, though, are we opening up a lot of litigation that could be potential here? Because if an HOA doesn't put this in the stamp that whoever puts the solar on is responsible, I have concerns there. So I think we're putting a lot of faith in those HOAs that we all just said we don't like to follow through and make sure they have the right bylaws.
I think that's a good point, and I think Representative Hemmingson-Yeager is going to judiciary next with this bill, and so that might be a place where that would be addressed. Representative, did you have anything to respond? Or?
So I just want to clarify, you're concerned about the HOAs being able to implement the specific part into their bylaws?
Yeah, if, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Igel, please.
Madam Chair, I just want to make sure, because if that isn't in their bylaws, and then the solar goes on, someone sells their house, and the HOA says, all right, time to redo your roof, you have to pay to take that off, and they're like, I didn't sign that. Okay. So that's my concern with that, is that we're putting a lot of faith in the HOAs to put this language in themselves.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Thank you. I'll write that down.
Representative Mecklen, before we move quick.
So to the conversation, if it's a row home, sometimes they have staggered roof heights, which makes it a little easier. However, typically in row homes and HOAs, the HOA assumes all responsibility for the roof. So if you're going to do this, and they're going to suddenly have the responsibility, is the HOA have the right to say, you now own that section of that roof. It's all on you now, including the shingles. If you don't, just to give you a clarification on that, it's right now it's $600 a square, roughly. And if it's steeper or higher, it goes up from there. But that's currently the thing. Now, if you're in a single family home within an HOA, your roof is your responsibility. You have to insure it. You have to replace it or repair it. So there would be, to Representative Carroll's point, that would make it a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. But then it does go back to also, if we're going to take that part of the HOA's authority away, what else are we going to take away? I mean, because there's a lot of people have a lot of complaints. Some people want to build a two-car garage, but they require a three. But maybe they don't need a three-car garage. So that was the whole point of the development. That was their intent, is to keep it all, just have some kind of uniformity. And I mean, just think long-term. Unintended consequences does happen in politics once in a while. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Yes, just want to say thank you. My background in science always leads me to think of unintended consequences, so that's why I really value today's discussion.
Let's go to Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if you happen to know the full path of this bill, because it does have Chapter 500 in it. I'm not sure if that's under the jurisdiction of judiciary. Is it?
I'm getting a nod from Mr. Logan O'Grady that it does. And it's going to judiciary. Yeah. And just judiciary? That's the indication that I'm getting.
Okay. So they'll probably ask these kind of questions, but, well, actually, since Mr. O'Grady is here, do you happen to know the cost of removal and reinstallation versus just the first installation? And I know... Representative Mecklen just talked about the square footage cost. I think you said just to put a roof on. Is that what you said? Or something like that. Anyway, I just wanted to know what the difference is in the cost, and it could be by square foot. Or I know you're not going to be able to tell me because each roof is different, but maybe you have a by square foot cost or something. Do you happen to know that now, or is that
Mr. O'Grady?
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't get asked a lot about removing solar. I get asked a lot about putting it on, which I can tell you the cost of putting it on for system size, but not removing.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I mean, since we've got a bill that is a lot to do with both removal and then reinstallation, I was hoping that you might have those numbers ready, because that seems like kind of a one-on-one question. But if you could get back to me at a different time, I look forward to that. The other questions I would have is, what if the solar developer who is supposed to be responsible for this then goes bankrupt? That isn't in the bill. Also, what if the homeowner, to their point, sells it, and then the new homeowner isn't made aware of it? I know they're supposed to be, but and they can't afford, you know, there may be a pensioner, and they can't afford to have the entire thing removed and reinstalled to do the roof. So these are some pretty glaring questions, and since we don't even know the basic cost of removal and reinstallation, that's kind of problematic.
And Mr. Severson, I wonder if you're coming up to the table, because you might have an estimate for removal.
Yes, Madam Chair. When I requested the proposals from three providers, two of which had indicated that with their estimate of between $2,000 and $5,000 for the both removal and reinstallation of the system if needed for roof repairs.
And I'm sure that would depend probably on size also and so forth. Yeah. But that's helpful to at least give a ballpark.
Yeah, it's a ballpark number.
Did you have any other further questions, Representative O'Neill, before we go to the last question with Mr. Representative Davis?
No, that was it. I wanted to make sure that this was going to the proper committees because we've had issues in the past. So thank you.
Thank you. Last question, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager. And the answer to this question may be glaringly obvious, but remember, I'm new here. What if a homeowners association says, forget the state of Minnesota, we don't want these eyesores on our homes? I come from an area where they just might do that. What then, how do you enforce it? Like, just sue them? Does the homeowner then just sue the HOA, or what do we do there?
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Yeah, so I think my understanding is that by prohibiting HOAs from doing exactly that, having that in state law now, they would have that mechanism to go through. I am not a lawyer, so I'm not sure if there's house research or house legal has an opinion, or maybe.
Looks like we got some.
You do.
No way.
Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Patrick Hines with Messerly and Kramer. I represent the much beloved Community Associations Institute.
Thank you for having a good sense of
yes.
humor.
So we represent the interests of homeowner associations, their management companies, and residents. To answer that question, so the homeowner associations are governed by Minnesota Common Interest Ownership Act, which is Chapter 515B, which is amended here, or this is actually Chapter 500, but they work in conjunction with each other. If a homeowners association violates any of its duties under MCIWA, which is what we call it, a homeowner would be able to bring a lawsuit in order to enforce the violation on the of either the rules, the bylaws, or the statute, and that's how it would be resolved.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Another question.
Well, this is just keeps going.
I know, right? We're
gonna have so to finish up pretty quick. So, if we'll use the example for simple numbers, if there's 100 homes in this development, and the 3/4 of them don't want any changes to their current HOA rules, could those 75 other homeowners, if they this all went through, could they then go back and sue the HOA for, because they were given a commitment to something when they moved in and now it's gone? I mean, I see this because we have some golf course that they want to sell, but they bought a golf course property. So if they develop it, their value tanks. But to that, could the other homeowners sue the HOA?
Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair and Representative Meeklin, so all of the homeowner associations are generally governed by their bylaws, rules, and regulations. Those are created by and enforced by the board. Another question, the board members are elected by the other unit owners. So the only members of the board are your neighbors who live in the same association. They have the power to amend the bylaws, rules, and regulations, and they also have the power to enforce them. All of the powers that they have as a board stem from the Common Interest Ownership Act from the state. So the state grants all of their powers. So what the state grants, the state can also limit. And so therefore, because the state grants them the authority to issue architectural controls, which is what we really are talking about here. If you know, most bylaws, unless they're very new, wouldn't reference solar panels, but they do say the board controls architectural controls, and that's where you sometimes see disputes about a fence that was installed that didn't meet a certain standard, or someone who wanted to paint their door neon pink. All of those things are architectural control. So the state gives them the power to do that, but it can also limit that power. And this is what's happening here to some extent, is that the state is saying you have the ability to issue architectural controls. When it comes to solar panels, you have a limited ability to do that. You can't simply say no. You have to give the owner the opportunity to meet these conditions, which are laid out in the bill starting on page 2.16. So I don't believe that other association members could sue the homeowners association for allowing solar panels to be installed on their neighbor's house because they're required to do so under MKIWA.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. And we're going to have one final
question. I'm so sorry. I just want to thank you that your answer to Representative Macklin's question wasn't, I hope so, whether or not they would be causing more lawsuits. But just something to consider, you know, we're thinking along the technology that currently exists. And I'm thinking of a problem that could arise if we get rid of the ability for locals to kind of control this to certain extents. What if we don't have, it's not like a separate where we have, you know, shingles underneath and then we have the solar over the top. What if they install like a Google roof where it's an integrated, where the shingles, do the HOA have the ability to regulate that, the Tesla shingles or whatever? How would that work, where it's actually a physical different roofing material? We're thinking along a current technology, but what about that next leap? Will they be able to say no to that in the fact of, because that changes dramatically, you know, it's not going to be $2,000. It's going to be, you know, what if that's the choice that the person makes? How does that, I think that's probably more of a statement rather than, because I don't think we know that, but that's probably, if it goes to that, that's probably where we're going, you know, at some point in the future.
Interesting. Mr. Hines, did you have
I don't think I've ever asked to answer a question that was asked 25 minutes ago, but just because it seemed to be a point of contention about the bylaws. Just wanted to clarify for everyone. When you purchase a condominium or any unit in a homeowners association, you are required to be given a set of the bylaws and the rules of regulations when you sign the purchase agreement. And state law also gives you 10 days to review those rules and regulations and bylaws. And if there's something in there that you don't like they won't let you have a pet or they won't let you have something else, you have the right to rescind the purchase agreement and any earnest money would be returned to you. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. I appreciate the clarity you've brought to the discussion today. Any closing comments, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager?
I'd just like to say thank you again for the discussion. This is a bipartisan effort and is highlighted by the testifiers, both here today at the hearing and through the written testimony that's in your packets. This bill seeks to allow homeowners and the consumer the ability to take part in the market for solar panels on their dwellings. I'm going to continue to work with the HOA community to ensure that their priorities are addressed while maintaining the homeowners' right to their own property. So with that, I'll renew my motion to move it to judiciary.
So Representative Hemmingson-Yeager renews her motion that House File 1262 be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the bill is re-referred. Next on our agenda, we have House File 1062. Representative Hill will be presenting. Welcome to committee, Representative. Please state your name for the record. Or actually, I'll move that House File 1062 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Hill has an author's amendment, coded DE1. And I'll go ahead and move the DE1 to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. Any discussion on the amendment?
It's falling apart.
Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE1 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. So welcome to committee, Representative Hill. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Chair Acom and members of the committee. My name is Josiah Hill. I represent, House District 33B, and I'm here with my friend and Oak Park Heights Mayor, Mary McComb, and we have a bill here before you that has to do with the Allen S. King Generation Plant in Oak Park Heights. Madam Chair, House File 1062 is a bill to assist my friends and neighbors in Oak Park Heights in the city itself as everyone prepares for the closing of the Allen S. King plant located there in Oak Park Heights. The plant was originally scheduled to close in 2040, but now, due to new planning with XL, it's scheduled to close in 2028. For purposes of planning, tax-based replacements, and community impacts, the date is right around the corner for all of us in surrounding communities. This bill simply requires the utility to provide their plan to decommission and demolish the facility and remediation information by December 31st in 2025. It ensures transparency for all and the ability for the city to plan for the community. I'm proud that the city of Oak Park Heights and XL have an excellent relationship and work cooperatively for our residents, and know they will continue to do so. The importance of this bill was recognized last session when both the Minnesota Senate and House included this bill in the omnibus energy bill. Unfortunately, as you know, that bill did not make it all the way across the finish line. I would now like to request, Mr. Chair, that Mayor of Oak Park Heights be allowed to testify.
Welcome to committee, Mayor. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Mary McCumber. I'm the Mayor of Oak Park Heights, and we host the Allen S. King plant, which Representative Hill mentioned is going to be closing much sooner than we had planned on. We had worked with the Integrated Resource Plan this last time to try and get some things, you know, our concerns in that plan. And as you know, the Integrated Resource Plan changes every several years. Gets updated every several years. So the object of this was to have this language so that as things go forward, that the city would be in good communication with the energy company. And the reason it's worded this way is energy company is some know over the years that it initially started as NSP, now it's XL. And I'm assuming it will stay XL, but you know, we never know. So keep it general with utilities in here. I would really like to thank Representative Hill for all of his advocacy and his help with moving these things forward. So I would appreciate your consideration of the language that is in this bill. And Madam Chair and members, I would be happy to take any questions.
Great. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hill, I'm just wondering why this bill is needed. It seems like XL will be laying all this out in their IRP, have already laid it out in their IRP. Are they resistant to informing? I don't understand why we're doing this, because this is part of the IRP process.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Acom, and thank you, Representative, for the question. My understanding is that this is a procedure when a generation plant is closed. On my visit with XL at the Allen S. King plant, they were aware of this and were on board for this, and so I think everybody's on the same page.
Representative O'Neill.
Oh, thanks, Madam Chair. But Representative Hill, this is the normal course of business doing the IRP, so I'm not exactly sure why we're doing a bill to compel them to do what they would normally do under the IRP process with the PUC. I don't understand the need for the bill.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Acom, and thank you for the question again. My understanding is this allows for proper planning time for the city of Oak Park Heights. Again, I didn't anticipate any concern from any of the parties involved when I talked to them all, and so this my understanding was that this is procedural.
And we do have XL Energy in the room if they're interested in saying a few words about this. Welcome to committee, Mr. Evans. Thank you for, we're just bringing everybody in. This is an
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rick Evans with XL Energy. I think the Representative O'Neill raises a point. We do file a resource plan every 3 years, and we detail what we plan to do with the resources we have as well as the resources we intend to acquire. I'll have to be honest with you, I don't know if there are things required in this bill that go beyond what we would ordinarily require in a resource plan, but we have no objection to providing the information that's called for in the bill.
Any further questions for the Senate opening?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, just a suggestion. I think a conversation with Excel would probably accomplish the same thing as opposed to doing a bill. I never know them to be resistant to provide information in a timely fashion, and I was just really not understanding why we're doing this bill, because they certainly aren't resistant to providing proper information at the proper time so that planning can be done. I just don't understand why we're doing this bill. It seems unnecessary.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Aikum. I would turn it over to Mayor McCumber.
Mayor.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, this came up last year during probably even before the IRP or part of the IRP, was to guarantee that there would be continued good communication between the power or the utility and the city for future planning so that we can have a better idea of their timelines as far as retirement, demolition, remediation, and this makes sure that that does happen. Because over time, as many of you know, we'll have different plans, a comp plan or something, and it gets on a shelf and forget about. This ensures that that communication will go from point A all the way through to the end.
And I certainly recognize the importance and the impact on Oak Park Heights with the closing of this plant, so I appreciate the interesting communication. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I understand that. I have Sherco just outside my district, and that is a much bigger facility. It's 2,400 megawatts of power at any given moment. It can run 24/7. You know, it's baseload. I get it. And this plant is much smaller than that. I also have the Monticello Nuclear Power Plant in my district. And now it probably will be extended another 10 years. They just filed with the NRC to be able to extend the life an additional 10. I should actually say 20, because with the NRC it's 20. But in any case, I get it. I still just don't understand why we need to do a bill to compel Excel to tell you their timeline. I don't think they're resistant to telling you their timeline or their plans. I know it's very, very difficult for a local community to have this infrastructure disappear, to have this revenue source disappear. Listen, we're having these same conversations in my district. I have lots and lots of people that work at Sherco. I have a lot of people that work at the Excel nuclear power plant in Monticello, and these are huge conversations that my community is having as well. I just have never found them to be withholding information, so that's new to me. I didn't know that Excel was not willing to share with you their plans going forward, so I just didn't understand why this is needed.
I understand. Glad to hear that Mr. Evans said that they were not in opposition to this either, so I think that's important. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Aikum, and thank you, Representative. If I misrepresented or misspoke, to my understanding and all of the interactions I've been in proximity to, there is no opposition between the two parties. And so as we move forward, as this was a bill that was included last year, again, this allows for everyone to be on the exact same page moving forward as the intense amount of planning and preparation for the city of Oak Park Heights begins to unfold. Thank you.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question, this is just kind of reading over the bill, you know, and, you know, Representative Davis and I guess are really tied, connected with a plant similar to this, but does the city of Oak Park Heights, are you guys excited for this plant to close? Do you want it to close? It's just a very blunt question, I understand, but you'll see why I'm asking in a second.
Mayor.
Madam Chair and Representative, it's kind of a mixed bag on that one. There are obviously people who want the smokestack and everything to go away and want the coal to go away, and then there's others who look at it as iconic, you know, they don't want to see it go away. But we do have a clean energy proposal in the state that it's going to happen. So the city's been working really hard over the last year, probably a year and a half, putting together an advisory committee to look at potential concept ideas of what could go at that site when it does finally get remediated. So we haven't just been sitting back and waiting and having great conversations with XL. And then last session, I testified on the same bill several times. And it got bipartisan support, and it was put forward in the omnibus energy bill, which unfortunately didn't make it to the governor's desk. But it has had bipartisan support, and we've had great communications with XL over the years. So there isn't a concern, you know, because of the great people that are there. There's not a concern. So I hope that didn't come across that way.
No. I think it's just the reassurance that you need. And I think not only the challenges that and benefits that you pointed out, but also the financial impact on the city is a big challenge as well.
Well, and that's, thank you, Madam Chair. That's the point I was going to make. Has the city started preparing? Do you have new tax base ready to go? Because what does the handout say? 32% of your tax base is going to disappear in about 4 years?
Right.
Do you have other economic opportunities?
Madam Chair and Representative, the city, as part of that advisory, has been looking at other things. Unfortunately, the city of Oak Park Heights is pretty much built out. There are no residential lots. There are very few, very small parcel commercial lots. So any rebuild of trying to get, say, a Google or an Amazon or something, that potential is just not there. So we'd be looking at any type of redevelopment that might come up, or transition aid. So the city's been working really hard trying to get the burden off of our taxpayers. We're a city under 5,000, so we don't get any MSA funds for roads. So it's a combination of things that will be coming down on us. But we're not sitting back. We're working hard on what we can do.
Representative Vigo.
Well, thank you for that. And I'll just say I wish you luck, because Representative Davis and I just spent the last 3 years working on a project that died because of state policies. And our community is now freaking out because they don't know how they're going to be able to pay for anything. So when we hear bills like this, it hurts, because I don't know. You know, I feel for your community. I feel for the communities that Representative Davis and I represent. Mm-hmm. So I hope you can find a solution, and I hope the state will support it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Swazinski?
I'm good.
Any other comments or questions? With that, any closing comments, Representative Hill?
Thank you, Chair Acom. No, just a message of thanks to the committee, a message of thanks to Mayor McCumber, and this is something that Oak Park Heights and XL have agreed to, and we're looking forward to that transition to the closing of Alan S. King plant and making sure that it goes as smoothly as possible for all parties involved. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Representative, and thank you, Mayor. And with that, the bill is laid over. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.